Let me ask you a question as we begin today's program. Does the world today seem strange? Are the things that we see happening, whether it be with the pandemic, whether it be with politics, whether it be world events, whether it be weather, does any of this even seem normal to you?
This is Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman.
One of the reasons I started this program, Truth to Ponder, is because during this past year or so, I've seen events occur that seem very much out of place. I see a change occurring in the world that many are simply blinded to seeing. Now, I'm not some kind of big conspiracy theory guy. Actually, I'm very pragmatic, very logical, and I look for facts. I look for information. I don't buy into every theory, but there's no doubt that something has changed in our world in very recent times. And what does it mean? Where is it going? I've invited a guest on the program today that I've been looking forward to having on the program. His name is Timothy Gales. Actually, he is the Reverend Dr. Timothy Gales. Here's a few things you need to know about him. He worked for 9 years on Wall Street in New York. He is a 9/11 survivor. He has traveled the gamut of Christian churches and landed as an Anglican priest and the vice president of a chaplaincy in a retirement community for the past 13 years. He has studied illness, suffering, death, and dying in the early church, and we'll be talking about that later this week, and also how to minister the image of God in man effectively. Timothy Gales is currently a chaplain to 3 retirement communities. He's a certified bioethicist and grief specialist. And I can understand that, having worked as a hospice chaplain a little over 20 years ago. Timothy Gales is the father of 6 children, husband to a wonderful wife, lover of old rare books, and as a hobby, he likes to actually rebind and fix books. Other than that, he says he's a simple guy. And so, Timothy, I want to open the program with you today with this question. I've read a lot of your material. You seem to be able to go through all the noise and get to some of the facts. And my first question, as I welcome you to Truth to Ponder, is what got you interested in these kind of world events?
So years ago, when I was reading the scriptures, Jesus had given us a statement, right, when the disciples asked him, what are going to be the signs of your coming and of the end of the age? And that always interested me. But what I noticed first and foremost wasn't just, you know, the world wars or all these things that he had predicted, earthquakes, but the first thing he said was, take heed that no man deceive you. Mm-hmm. And I sat back and I said to myself, well, deception. He wasn't saying take heed that no one person deceive you in the sense of, you know, a guy at the store or nothing against used car salesmen, but you know what I mean.
Absolutely, but, you know, absolutely.
He is saying to us, take heed that no man deceives you. In other words, the characteristic, first and foremost, of a time to be concerned about is deception, mass deception.
Absolutely.
And when I worked on the trading floor in New York, it was commonly known that the Federal Reserve was not federal. It was a privately owned company, has stocks traded on the trading floor. European bankers owned it. And yet I realized nobody else really knew that outside of that small group. And, you know, I realized that they all thought it was federal. Mm-hmm. And so that was a massive, it still is, just by the name. Right.
Well, people have always known that we appoint somebody to that board, the chairman, but he's not like an authoritarian individual. He's just one of many.
That's exactly right. And do we really? Congress has oversight, but they have no real power over them. So that's concerning. And people, again, think it's still a department, a federal department, and it's not.
No.
So when you realize all your currency in this country is you know, valued, printed, and, you know, given, you sit there and you say, wait a minute, this is something huge.
That's right.
And it just went from there. So as I researched that, it led, you know, kind of down the rabbit hole to different things you realize are actually deceptive.
Absolutely.
Corporate, governmental, national, things like that. So that opened what you would call the proverbial can of worms.
Absolutely. You know, one thing, stop and think about this. And it just dawned on me a moment ago. The average high school graduate today, even college graduate today, probably someone in their 30s or 40s today, doesn't understand the monetary system that we have. It's a fiat currency. That's value, and its only value is debt. That's it. It's only debt, and people don't get that. What do you mean by it's debt? You know, can't we just confiscate all the wealthy people's money and live off that forever? No, because I think somebody figured it out one day. When you look at that top, 5% that pay, 40-50% of all taxes, the top 10% pay what, 90? Some unreal number. If you confiscated all their wealth, took their homes, their cars, their vacation properties, their diamonds and their bank accounts, and threw them out on the street like homeless, and about a year from now, or a year and a half, you're out of money. It's gone. You don't have enough.
And here's the thing. You're talking debt, and that's true. In the Middle Ages, there was something called the Philosopher's Stone. The philosophers were trying to find out how they could alchemically turn stones to gold.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they did it, except it's trees.
Mm-hmm.
They took paper, and they made paper into money.
That's right.
And so I typically say to people, I'll show them a $10 bill in my pocket, say, how much is this? And they'll say, $10. And then I'll grab a piece of paper and I'll write 10 in each corner and I'll put a picture of somebody on it and I'll hold that up and I'll say, how much is this? And they'll say, nothing. It's just ink on a piece of paper. And I'll say, and how much is this again? And I'll pull the $10 bill out and they'll say $10. I'll say, no. It's ink on a piece of paper. Now, what they did is they took that, which cost them nothing, and they turned it around and put us in debt to it so that they can confiscate real assets from us.
Uh-huh.
And that's what they did. And that's how they control. It's really an alchemical type of illusion that we have done that. We've given up money. In other words, if I took a gold piece, and I showed it to you, I'd say, is this worth something? And you'd say, absolutely. And then I'll tell you, well, if I take it and bury it in the ground and pull it out 100 years from now, is it still worth something? And you'd say, absolutely.
Because it's gold.
Yes. But paper money? No. It's worth whatever they tell you it's worth, and you think it's worth that. So, you know, we are in a time of the deception, and that's just one of many avenues. That we're looking at, and that, like I said, it was the rabbit trail that led down not just economical deception, but so many other avenues. And with the television or the technology and the things that we have today, propaganda is something huge that most people, let's face it, most people don't recognize or don't even think it's there. When we don't use our cognitive sifting, William Blake said this in one of his poems. He said, "This life's dark windows of the soul distorts the heavens from pole to pole and goads you to believe a lie when you see with and not through the eye."
Absolutely.
That's what we do when we look at our computer screen or our television screen, isn't it? Or on our iPhone. We see with, but not through. We're not cognitively sifting through everything we're seeing. It's going past us quick. Commercials and ads and advertisements and all of these things. So it's imprinting itself in our mind. And that's where we've even had problems in the past and laws talking about how it can cause us and manipulate us to do things. You know, we call it on television programming for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it has that effect.
It does. So, look, I think at my age now, I'm officially, or have been now for a little while, a senior or seasoned citizen. And I'm even a snowbird, spending part of my time in Florida. So I have turned into that in which I decried, you know, 40 years ago. I have become that now. But in my life, what I've seen, and this is what young people today don't understand. I didn't understand it 40 years ago. I remember taking a wonderful job at a little radio station in 1972. That's a long time ago. And I got paid, a little over $2 an hour when the minimum wage was $1.65 an hour. And you'd say, well, how did you survive on that? And it dawned on me, well, the little restaurant across the street, coffee was a quarter, 25 cents, not $2.50. If I wanted to get breakfast, I could get, I can remember this, across the street from the radio station, maybe a half a block down, in the little village of Newark, New York, near Lake Ontario, I could walk into this little restaurant where you could even light up a cigarette while you're eating. Remember those days? And you could sit down, and I got coffee, two eggs, Italian sausage, and hash browns, home fries. Mm-hmm. Basically, 99 cents. That's it.
Boy.
I could go to the hamburger joint, the first McDonald's, and, you know, you could buy a pair of cheeseburgers for like 60 cents.
And the coins you used, probably some of them still had silver.
Yeah, they didn't have the little copper in it yet to lower its value. And my grandfather, and I had a few in my desk drawer. I had some silver certificates that looked just like a regular American currency, but instead of saying note, like Federal Reserve note, it said issued to bear that equivalent amount of silver.
Try and put that in and ask for silver today.
Yeah, and because if I had a note that said $10 in silver, well, silver has gone up in value, so I'm not going to get quite as many ounces as you would have gotten in 1972. We've all heard that little phrase, you know, shaving a haircut two bits. And when you think about it, shaving a haircut two bits, that's 25 cents, you know, because 12 and a half cents is a bit, or two bits is a quarter. And that's true. If you had 25 cents worth of 1800s silver, it would still buy a shave and a haircut today. Just like the gold, if you had a gold coin where you could take a few of those to buy a brand new suit back in the 1800s, that same amount of gold will buy you a brand new suit, shoes, ties, and shirt and everything today with money left over. I mean,
yes. So here's the thing. We look at the economic deception, which is part of what got me on the track here. And it's understood. Of course, there's an economic deception going on. Economies around the world, as we just pointed out. Mm-hmm. The other thing was the technological deception that I kind of touched upon there for a minute. And then it leads into what I call an anthropological deception to mankind. Like, what is man? Where did we come from? And, you know, we're moving into a place now where it's becoming apparent. It's been here prior, but it's becoming apparent that we are now looking at a medical deception.
Absolutely.
In our food. So all of these things I'm touching upon obviously would take other times to look at each one, but they all tie together as to where we are now. And it's something that people need to be aware of.
Absolutely.
I think to obviously make informed choices, to be cognizant of what's going on, because most people don't. You mentioned young people don't know much today in different areas.
And I think that's by design. That's by design.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can look at the education system, and we've had some individuals come on over the years to point out some of the issues there. There's a reason Common Core is called Common for. You know, what we're doing now is we're not creating Einsteins or any of these great minds. We're creating worker bees for the
drones,
hive.
Just drones for the hive. You know, I want to remind people, you're listening to Truth to Ponder. I'm your host, Bob Bierman. And I want to let you know about the website in case you've not been there yet. The website is truth2ponder.com. That is truth2ponder.com. And this week on the program, I'm going to be talking about several topics and hopefully bringing some people on that can add some insight because of their own work, their own study, their own initiative, which is something I'm going to encourage you to do. First, be very distrustful of your news. I mean, number one, be distrustful of your news, because most of the news organizations are owned by just a small handful of multi-billion dollar companies. It's not diverse like it was, let's say, just 80 years ago or 100 years ago, where there were plenty of voices in competition and willing to be truthful. Now there's an agenda. ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN. You cannot trust them because of what they've become. They are no longer a news organization. I got a kick the other day. You had Attorney General Barr on with Wolf Blitzer, and Wolf Blitzer had the audacity to say that they're a fair and balanced news agency. And I almost watch, you know, poor Attorney General Barr's about choke and laugh. You know, it was like he's on the set with the guy, and he was like, really? You got to be kidding. And I'm going to be playing some stuff that I'm collecting from these talking head bozos and the things that they try to lead you to believe, even to a degree. And I'm going to get somebody mad in saying this here in the United States, even to a degree. Don't always fully trust anything you see on Fox News either, because there is an element in the corporate world that looks for the advertising, and that's where they can become compromised when it comes to things of that nature. Talking with Timothy Gales, who also, like me, happens to be in ministry, and you have a unique ministry during the week in helping people, but you've spent a lot of your life, and this is what we're talking about today, something made you aware that something is not right. And I remember years ago, I think that, and people would say, no, you're crazy, man. No, you're one of those conspiracy theorists. And I'm looking back now, the stuff that I believed in or was worried about way back then, now, when I think about it, I mean, this is the kicker. The things that I was so worried about way back then are coming true today. And, you know, it comes gradually. It's just like the old, you know, the analogy of the frog in cold water. You heat it up slowly, he boils to death without knowing, instead of being thrown right in. And when I'm looking back over time, I remember something a high school English teacher told me right before I graduated. One of the last of what I would call the real educators that were not indoctrinators. He always pushed for an open discussion. Nobody ever felt out of place. And he made a statement to us right before we had our final exams. He said, you may be the last class in this school's history that will get a real education and not be told what to think. And I didn't think much about it at the time. But as I look at these kids coming out of school with no knowledge of history, no knowledge of economics, no knowledge about life in general, I go, what happened? And parents, you know, we've gone into the two-income household by necessity because we ask for more. The government charges us more, so it takes two incomes to do what one income could do 40 years ago. And so our kids now become the property of the state, and they're treated as such. They really are.
Well, when you look at the background of the history of education, even, you know, it was in the 20s. I think you had Machen, J. Gresham Machen from Princeton, who argued to Congress about bringing together a federal education system. He said, if you do that, if you read his writings, then he said, if you do that, you are going to make it a dumbed down commonality education. In other words, you won't have the Einsteins or the Shakespeares or any of them. And that was precisely what some intended. One book I read when I looked into this was by a gentleman named John Taylor Gatto. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a book called The Underground History of American Education, A School Teacher's Intimate Investigation into the Problem of Modern Schooling. He was Teacher of the Year in New York for a number of years. He really reached these kids. But when he did an investigation, it's nothing short of, again, a deception in education that was handed to the American people. Uh-huh. And again, you always have to ask what the Romans asked, right? Cui bono? Who benefits from
exactly.
that? Exactly. Who benefits?
Or follow the money, another way to put it.
You got it. And what's the purpose? What's the purpose of doing this? If you look at homeschooling, for instance, today, which obviously a lot of parents are trying to do now with this COVID-19 issue.
Which may be the only silver lining about this entire, you know, cloud that's around us.
Right. Yep, it may be, but it can also open up the door to say, for the government to say, okay, look, if it's got to be this way, then we now have to come in to monitor your homeschool and make sure it's going the right way, mm-hmm. which can bring problems. But what you do see here is, you know, the old Little House on the Prairie days. You had the eighth graders in the same one-room schoolhouse with the second graders. And what the teacher would do, she would teach or he would teach to the older students first. And right. then while they were teaching the fifth graders, they would have the eighth graders go and kind of watch over the second graders and help them with their reading and so mm-hmm. forth. So there was a mentoring going on at different ages, and they learned. They even learned maturity there. When you take all second graders and put them in a room, you're going to have one level of maturity, essentially. And what I found with a lot of homeschoolers with families, multiple members of the family at different ages, the younger ones always spoke at a higher level, and their conversations were at a higher level because those were their peers.
That's right.
Those were the ones they talked to every day.
They weren't being talked down to. They're not being talked down to.
Absolutely.
Like little Johnny, I know you don't understand. I mean, there's almost this condescending to young people.
Yep.
And they get Absolutely. To a point, as some I've seen, they just become, the whatever, man. Let me play my video game. Whatever. I don't care about my grades. Whatever. We give them toys to play with to pacify them. And I know I've talked about this on this show. The school district in Florida, where we live part of the time, St. Lucie County, they brag about their 97% graduation rate, which is about as phony as a $3 bill. And the reason I say that is I know people that have graduated that because they were lazy, because they wouldn't do the work, because they didn't care, because they were playing video games, they were too busy playing with their phones. They're called special needs, and then they go to school for 2 hours a day for their senior year and somehow look like they're graduating high school with a special needs diploma.
Yeah, well, I used to be a case manager at a kind of a home for teenage boys, and I used to have to go at representing them for PTA meetings, parent-teacher association meetings, so forth. And I went to a meeting. We were talking about a particular child who had turned 20, and he had some difficulties learning, and he was still in senior. And they said to me, you know, we do know that he is functionally illiterate, and we're trying to work with him, but this is the last year we can have him here. You know, no child left behind. And we don't want to hurt his feelings, and we don't want him to feel like I'm old and I'm in this high school. And I said, now, wait a minute. Where do you think his feelings are going to be hurt when he tries to go for his first job? And they look at him and say, you can't even read.
Absolutely.
And he doesn't get it. I said, you think his feelings are going to be hurt then? And I was trying to advocate for these kids, but you are correct. They pushed them through and pushed them out there.
And want more money to do it. And they keep wanting more money to do it. And every year, the quality of the product goes down, but the price, when you look at some school districts spending $23,000 to $24,000 a year for a second grader to be educated, I mean, all right, so you put 20 of them in a classroom, do the math. And you're telling me you can't educate them at that kind of price? Maybe it's because of the 700% increase you've had in administrators over the last 25 years. Maybe it's the money being wasted.
Well, you know, whenever you have the big Goliath, right, you put the government involved in something, it becomes a bureaucratic nightmare. Mess. And what it delivers is always lower. So it always amazes me how today so many people say, well, we have to put health care in the federal government's hands. Do you really want that?
No.
Let's step back. Do you think it's going to be better?
Well, they're deceived. Look, a lot of people, here's the key. You know, and I know, that we have a whole group of people that have no understanding of our economic system, period. They think money is all in the hands of a few people. They really believe that all the money that was ever printed was printed at some point in time, and somebody's hoarding it all, and I want my piece of that money. They don't understand that new money comes in the system, of course, as debt. That's all it is, debt. And someday, the bill is coming due. And we have been going on borrowed times for a long time in this nation and world. The whole world's economy is going to collapse at some point. It has to.
We're there now in the sense that we are in the greatest depression, but people haven't realized it quite yet. And it will get worse. If we lock down again, my fear is America's going to look like Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the backbone of our country.
Hey, that's the plan. That's the plan. Yeah. I don't think anybody understands that, you know, there are forces in this world, not just in the United States, in this world, that looks at a nation like ours, or even to a lesser degree, a Canada or Australia, and a few of the European nations, they cannot be allowed to stand as powerful as they are. And people like China, countries like China, will do anything in their power to knock us down three or four or five pegs and let them become dominant. Their goal is to be the dominant nation by 2040.
I mean, and what is dominance in that sense, right? I mean, we have obviously the very wealthy, the rich, really rich, are the ones who are kind of funding all this. Because when you have billions and billions of dollars, money means nothing and wealth means nothing anymore. What means something, what is the aphrodisiac, as Brzezinski said, is power.
Absolutely.
Power over things, right?
Look at Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi last week. You know, what's good for thee is not for me. And you can say whatever you want. We can talk about what should have happened in that salon out in San Francisco. But, you know, she tells everybody to wear a mask. And she has her matching little face coverings on every day as a virtue signaler. And I remember when she walked across, you know, under the rotunda, wearing her gloves and her mask, with her looking like Frankenstein, keep the virus away from me, trying to tell us how we need to dress, act, and look in fear. We have to live in fear. But notice that she didn't bother to wear a mask when she went to get her hair done. I mean, all of a sudden, it didn't matter.
Really believe?
I don't think they fully believe it either.
And we like to show solidarity for good causes, right? But what we did is, have you ever heard the phrase, I bend the knee to no man?
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course. But what became, we took a submissive action and we turned it into a solidarity action. So all of a sudden, everybody is being kind of forced or manipulated into bending their knee to a particular cause. But that was never seen as a solidarity thing before. Mm-hmm. We have to watch, just like semantics, right? The word games. Instead of one group being, you know, pro-death and another one being, you know, we change the terms to choice, and then we change the terms to life. And this goes into all areas. We use semantics as what? As a deceptive way of propagating our idea, like, or black ideology. Look,
like Black Lives Matter, like Black Lives right. Matters. It doesn't, they don't matter. Right. If they really did, as I pointed out on a recent program, real fast, then we got to take a break here, just and I want to get to that break point. Black Lives Matters is all about the either 9 or 13, depending upon which number you go with, of unarmed black men that were killed by police in the year 2019. Whether it's 9 or 13, well, stay with 13. In any given weekend in Chicago, which represents less than 1%, 1% of the population of the United States, that's a typical Saturday night of people, of blacks killing blacks. But those lives don't matter. Nobody's marching, nobody's rioting, nobody's demanding that we do something about those lives, because they don't matter. It doesn't help the cause. So only certain black lives matter. It was to change the system. Real quick, we've got to take a break here on Truth to Ponder, and we will be right back with Timothy Gales right after this.
This is Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman. This is Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman.
And welcome back to the program Truth to Ponder. I'm your host, Bob Bierman. This now begins our second week of broadcasting, and I want to thank those that have actually taken the time to drop me a card or a letter to let me know that you are actually listening to the program. It means a lot to me. You can find our website at truth2ponder.com. That is truth2ponder.com. I want to make a note here on this Monday. If you're listening on shortwave, you'll find the program is being broadcast at 6 p.m. Eastern on a frequency of 9395 kilohertz. And that frequency covers pretty much up the East Coast and way beyond Michigan, heading toward west into Wisconsin and even almost out to Idaho. And we want to hear from you if you're listening on 9395. It runs again at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on a frequency of 9455 and a frequency of 5850 kilohertz. And between those two frequencies, it should be virtually all of the 48 states and most all of Canada. So if you're listening on shortwave, do me a favor. Go to the website if you get a chance, truth2ponder.com. That is truth2ponder.com. And let me know that you're listening to the program. Timothy Gales is my guest today on the program. Timothy is one of those people like me. Curiosity gets to you. And you don't have to be an accredited expert on anything to read, research, and use common sense. At least that's where I come from. And you learn a lot because you work hard to learn a lot. And I've been following a lot of the things that Timothy does. And you're so right, Timothy, and welcome back to this second segment of the program.
Oh, thank you, Bob. You know, I mean, ultimately, I did go out and I earned my doctorate and I did all my studies. But, you know, you're right. You don't have to. You just got to research. Go with your gut and look things up. You had left us off before talking a little bit about Black Lives Matter. I was a bit shocked when I saw that they had torn down a statue of Frederick Douglass, who happened to be a self-taught escaped slave. And he was born about 100 years ago. But when I was a kid, my father used to say a quote to me, and I didn't realize where that quote came from. I thought it was kind of something he made up. He said, he was a lawyer, and he said to me, Tim, in this country, we have three boxes of liberty. He said, our founders gave us the voting box, they also gave us the jury box. And if those two fail, they gave us the ammo box.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to laugh, and I thought, wow, that's pretty neat. Well, guess who really said that? Frederick Douglass.
That's true.
Frederick Douglass's exact quote is this. He said, a man's rights rest in three boxes: the ballot box, the jury box, and the cartridge box.
And you know something? Those three mm-hmm. boxes are being dismantled one by one. I mean, let's start with the voting. Look at all the screaming about we need mail-in ballots, we need this, we need that, we need more money for this. And somehow the system has not worked in 240 years, apparently, to listen to what they have to say. They have to modify. They're doing things that are unconstitutional, in my opinion, in many states.
In allowing,
and in other words, they are trying to destroy the ballot box. And when they destroy, yes. And look at our, quote, legal system. I don't even dare call it much of a justice system anymore, because justice has been for sale like a prostitute for decades, if not for 50 years. And so we have a legal system, and it's generally unfair to a lot of people. I mean, and I've known, I've never shared this on this program, but I knew I'm not going to say where, a actual prosecutor running for office. And he was at a radio station I was at for a candidates forum. And a bunch of them went outside of the building when we bought on the next group. And I happened to overhear this guy running for re-election as a prosecutor. He had been there in that office about 8 to 10 years. And he tells this guy, and I'm going to quote him exactly, "I don't give a damn about their guilt or innocence. All I care about is my win and loss record." And, you know, and the guy said, yeah, you're right. That's the only way you can ever become a judge in this state. It's like, whoa, you know.
There you go.
I mean, this was like 25, 26 years ago, and it hasn't gotten any better. It really hasn't.
No.
Plea deals all the time. And look what's happening out west. We're not going to prosecute those people that have burnt down buildings and destroyed cars. We're just not going to do it. You know, we're going to give an appearance ticket because of the coronavirus, and we're not going to even.
Right.
And then you have another DA saying to the police, this is out in California, take into consideration when you pick up somebody for robbing or looting, they may have needed that item. So don't charge them.
Right.
In other words, this person can steal a big screen TV set, but if they didn't have one and they needed it, you need to take that into consideration and not charge them.
Well, this all goes back, Bob, to the media deception, right? The technological deception. But what I would like to say is that is parallel to what a religious person such as myself, who is a Christian, would see God's providence working in our lives, right? And we pray and we speak to God, and he speaks to us through his word and circumstances and so forth. And what they have nowadays is they've substituted that type of providence with Wi-Fi.
Absolutely.
So now we can, it's a mimic of God's providence, that I can know all things, I can become, you know, like him in the sense, know all things, be everywhere at once, except it's not true information all the time. And much of it is not moved by God, obviously, but by the tech giants, which is part of the
technological tech tyrants. More like tech tyrants now.
Tech tyrants, you got it. And that's where we are today.
Google, Yahoo, any of the big social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, you name it, they are not a friend to either those who hold to a Christian worldview or anybody that holds to even conservative, like, take care of yourself values. You are now diminished. And we're all on our way into the boxcar to the tech ghetto. You know, that are
so the connection that we're bringing up here is, it's not just the media technological deception, but it's tied to the spiritual.
Absolutely.
Because the spiritual man and the spiritual woman are those who have a connection to the true spiritual. But when you promote Marxism, atheism, things like that, materialism, or what I call naturalism, okay, then you have to substitute the spiritual somewhere.
Well, we begin to worship the creation. We worship the creation.
Sure, but they're adding the spiritual through the technology as well. So it's giving us that omniscience, omnipresence, all of these attributes of God. We're now partaking in that, but it's a pseudo spirituality. It's fake. And that's the problem, because people are tying it all together and being deceived by it. Because who controls the controllers, right? And that's what we're looking at in our day and age. So for me, I mean, off the top of my mind right now, I can tell you my own research, kind of summing it up to you, that I looked at six areas of deception, you know, the economic, which we touched upon, the technological, the anthropological, the educational, the national, we can get to that, and the spiritual. Six, and they're all connected, all of them.
And here's something that, and here's something we have to also add to this equation, because you're dead on. For years, I've been interested in Bible prophecy, and I go back to my days as a Lutheran and then exploring all the various kind of charismatic type churches. We're going way back, and hearing all these diverse opinions about eschatology that are out there. And over the years, I've listened to people's claims of what this must be and what that must be, and this is coming, or maybe that happened. And the more I begin to study, the more I realize how much has already been fulfilled, scary thought. And we don't,
right.
And if your eyes are not open, you don't see it. You're waiting for this big monstrous blow up one day in the future that may not come the way you expect it. It's going to come subtly and like a thief in the night. Piece by piece, we're getting there. And it dawns on me, look at the state of the Christian church in the Western world today, or those that call themselves a Christian church. What I call like the woke Lutherans, the woke Methodists, the woke Presbyterians and Episcopalians, where it's all about social justice and gay weddings and Black Lives Matters. And Jesus is just a nice guy. And he may or may not have died on a cross, and he was definitely not resurrected. And then it dawned on me that all these independent Baptist preachers from way back when are wrong about who the great whore of Babylon is. It's all these churches that have ditched Jesus Christ for this woke thought. It's not, you know, God love them, oh, it has to be the Roman church or this. No, it doesn't. It's all of them. It's all that have walked away from the resurrection and the good news. And they have.
And it started early on. It started early on. I mean, Martin Erdman wrote a book called The Ecumenical Quest for a World Federation. And it was the church's contribution to the Marshall Public Support for World Order and Peace. 1919 to 1945 is when it was really taking shape. And it was the all of what you said, the progressives, the things that they're fighting for, but it dumbed down who Jesus is, right? And who the scriptures have always said he is. And so each of these denominations began to fall one by one to this ideology, or what I call new religion. And it is a new religion, which is going to meld perfectly with the globalism, with the environmentalism, with all of the above. It is. So you are seeing, I guess, in Bible prophecy, we were taught some broader themes. We were taught the world would come together under this personage called the Antichrist. We were taught that, you know, people would have a world religious system. And we used to think, well, how can that be? There's so many religions. How are they going to all come together? And just like you have common core, I call it common cause in religions. And that's what's going to bring them together in many ways. And they'll have some distinctions in and of themselves, but they will submit to the common cause, and they will be a one world religion.
Almost like Buddhism, you know, which doesn't really believe in a deity at all, but it believes in harmony with the earth, harmony with each other, peace, and relationships with other races, and we have to have the most important thing, social justice. and live in and live in unity with the planet.
And really, I mean, Buddhism isn't even a religion; it's a philosophy. And the fact is that we have all of these philosophical ideas or ideologies that present themselves as religions. But either way, you're correct. These things are going to come together under some umbrellas. Mm-hmm. And what we need to do is spot the umbrellas and then look under them. And that way we are prepared and we can see things. You see, as the world is being embroiled in what Jesus said is deception, I think our job, especially as ministers and those as laymen, is to expose the deception.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
He said, shine a light on the darkness. That is part of our job.
We are salt and light in this earth. Light, darkness absolutely. Hates light, and salt is a preservative. When the Christians no longer are Christians, and we are now pushed into our little ghettos, there's something upon my heart. As you know, we are both in a very similar, almost identical faith group, just a different branch of the same thing. But my heart's been telling me for years, even before any of this stuff we're seeing today came along, that the day is coming when the church will be in peril, and its ability to function as it always has, even in this country, is going to disappear. Now, in European countries, they're doing a great job on their own in dismantling their churches, because what they've done, people have walked away. What it's like, what, 1-2% of the population in England goes to church? It's really dismally low. And yet, every time a beautiful Anglican church or Presbyterian or former Bible-believing Methodist church goes out of business, it becomes a mosque. In England,
yes,
every week,
yep,
and we are seeing the spirit of Antichrist, you know, just running rampant. Look, we were told in Scripture the spirit of Antichrist is already here. We're not waiting for that to come. It has been here, working every day, day in and day out, to try to in the deception
of iniquity.
And I'm
the mystery of iniquity,
and so
it's gaining ground and it's gaining strength.
I was saying a year ago, when the economy was great and you could open up a church any old time you had the money or people to do it, and virtually in 99% of the country, you wouldn't get a whole lot of pushback from zoning and all this nonsense. You could find a way to do it. We're seeing in California a double standard on the First Amendment. You can protest, riot, and scream in people's faces. You could even break windows on cars. But you can't go to church. And churches are being sued. In other words, we only accept half of the First Amendment, and only if we agree with what is being said in that so-called free speech. But you churches are spreaders of evil and germs and viruses, and you're going to kill people if you gather.
You know, and here's something I'd want to definitely say before we end. What we're seeing, let's look at the big picture. The big picture is telling us that we are watching an inversion of God's created order. Now, let me qualify that. A satanic inversion
Absolutely.
Of God's created order. Whatever was right is now wrong. Whatever was good is now evil. You're seeing the enemy blur the distinctions of male and female, of all of those right and wrong principles. We're watching life is no longer sacred, but we can kill the babies in the womb, trade the body parts, and make money. We can euthanize the elderly because quality of life. We can do all of these things that denigrates the human person.
I've got to add this. I want to pause right there for a second, because you just touched on something. And I have friends that are also that have done this over the years. About 22 years ago, when I was in ministry in Florida, I became a volunteer hospice chaplain. And back then, the way a hospice agency ran was very different, I think, from what's happening today. They weren't as quick to throw the morphine drip in. They tried to give you a quality of life. And as at that time, a presbyter, a priest in an Anglican church, I could freely exercise my ministry to people in their homes, in the hospice house, or in a hospital. And nobody ever questioned what I did. But we started getting this pressure out of the new corporate structure that, well, we don't want you to talk too much about Jesus. We don't want you to talk about sin. You can't. We need to be like all dogs go to heaven and everybody who dies is going to that happy, happy place. And the sooner we can get you there, the better, became the attitude. And they were literally looking for people to replace me. I was volunteer, and they were going to start paying these expert chaplains. And the do you think the preferred, shall we say, background for a chaplain would be to replace the work that I was doing about when I got out of it in 2001? I can tell you the truth. There were two different types, and I ran into one when my late wife was a hospice patient and the chaplain came by to visit. And what do you think the two backgrounds are that were so important to a hospice chaplain in Southwest Florida? I feel like playing I ought to play the Jeopardy theme here or something in the middle of this.
Right. I see today are certain, you have to be sifted through organizations like CPE and other things for certain individuals to even accept you. And most places won't accept you unless you have some sort of certification and credit from them, which are run by an ideologically based group for the most part.
And I couldn't do that. And I wouldn't.
Right.
I refuse.
And this is what I, you know, just so you know, my doctorate in 6 years, I spent studying the 5th century Cappadocian fathers on the issue of illness, suffering, death, and dying. I wrote a chapter in my book on the past 1,000 years of death and dying in the Christian world. And I dealt with hospice and all of that. So there's always a good thing to hospice, a good thing to these things. But you're correct. We're in an age now, what we'd call an age of death, where
a culture.
You know, a good death is that I don't have mom or dad or whoever suffer anymore. So I give them that extra morphine and we say our goodbyes.
That's right.
And
I'm dealing with the guy that came to visit me was a Unitarian Universalist.
Okay.
And then I said, no, thank you. I'm fine. And then another guy came by. A gal came by. She was in the hospital 10 days. And about the sixth day, this other gal just pops her head in. Hi, I'm with hospice. And I'm looking at her credentials. She's a Buddhist.
And I
threw them out. I mean, I threw them both out. I said, when the second one came in, I said, if you send me another hospice chaplain that's not a believer in Jesus Christ, I may get angry enough because I'm watching my wife die. See that window over there? We're on a fourth floor. You want to go out head first? Don't come back. I mean, I'd had enough. And I realized then that hospice at that time had taken a very dramatic change. I knew a person that was in great health, had a minor issue, and they declared him suddenly a hospice patient. He was dead in 4 days. With what? Right. Morphine increased every hour, an increase in the drip. We are literally, I'm sorry, I'm going to say it, we are committing euthanasia now, and we call it care.
Absolutely. A culture of death, and that's what we would expect. And that would be, again, part of what we can discuss on the medical deception of today.
Yeah, we're going to be talking more, I can tell.
Sure.
But there's one warning I want to leave on, and I'll ask your quick opinion on it as we're getting near the end of this segment in a few minutes. As Christians, and even conservatives, but as Christians, too many churches became too comfortable during the pandemic of doing their services on Facebook Live. Most did a pretty lousy job. I'm sorry, no offense. But putting a cell phone in the back of your church where it's all echoey and hard to understand and the piano's out of tune is not the way to reach out to non-believers. It's just not the way to do it. But we are going to have to be very careful moving forward as Christians to become less dependent upon the tech tyrants that can't wait to find a legitimate reason to shut you down. Because they'll find something you said that is politically incorrect or maybe not sensitive to some group. You may say, well, God said there are two genders, and that'll be considered hate speech. They pull your plug. And so all of you listening right now, especially if you have any technical background, be deep in prayer on how God can use you where you are. Maybe you're trying to produce something and you're trying to find an outlet. Now's a good time to get in touch with me, as I'm trying. I just feel this urgency in starting this program. This is just a launching platform for many. This is a launching platform for many as we begin to discern the Holy Spirit's leading, guidance, and direction. The church will always be a remnant. And we have to stop thinking that that we've got a country of 330 million people going to heaven in this nation. We don't. Many have willfully rejected openly. And I can't vouch for any their security. There's just none. Yet we as Christians are going to have to band together and find our own ways of communicating and taking care of each other's needs and become less dependent upon the government around us that really doesn't like us. Your closing thoughts on that before we end.
I would agree. We see in the churches today, you know, what I consider through this pandemic a great sifting of the chaff from the wheat. Every group, every denomination, every group of Christians out there is not wholly believers. And we're seeing that now. So the remnant issue is correct. The other part I would say is, you know, we're coming quickly to a point in our society, yes, even in America, where the catacomb church is beginning to form.
Yes.
Because we see these things in technology and they're in the church. And yes, just like in China and other places in the world, they monitor what you say in the churches and then they want to co-opt the organization, which is part of the apostasy.
Absolutely.
Of the last days. So really, everything we say, if we're preaching from the Word of God, is going to be politically incorrect. And we're at that point now where the preaching is going to have to be somewhere else.
Absolutely.
Where not bad. So, you know, hopefully at one point we can get into the idea of the catacomb church.
Oh, we will.
I not only see it happening.
It's
but
happening.
I know it is going to become more of a reality.
Look. If you had said this last year, would you have believed how many churches have had to be shut down and now are not reopening, and they're still, it really has, we never will believe what has already occurred. Timothy, I want to thank you for being on the show. Timothy Gales, you'll be back. Trust me on that. And I'm watching this clock run out. And you're right. We are coming toward that age where we're going to see a very different time. My friend, we've got to be ready for this change that we're coming into. Your eschatology may believe in a rapture. Maybe you don't, like I. I don't necessarily believe in a rapture. It doesn't seem to fit into Scripture. But there's one thing that all of us as Christians can count on, that He is coming again for His bride, the church. And my question for you today, are you ready?
This has been Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman. To find out more, visit our website, truth2ponder.com. That's truth2ponder.com. Truth to Ponder, shining the light of truth in a darkening world.